I have got on the line with me, I believe, Brian Richardson. Brian, are you there?
Hi, Paul. I'm here. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, you weren't at Tarbu Lake on Saturday, August 15th or 16th, were you?
No, sir, but thanks for making the announcement.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I'm glad I wasn't there, and I'm glad to be here with you and that you're giving us some of your time today. So you are from you work for Dove House, correct? Can you give us a little background on who you are and where you come from, how you ended up in Jefferson County?
Yeah, for sure. Yes, I do work for Dove House. I'm the Recovery Cafe program manager. I've been in Jefferson County for about 4 years now. I moved here from Sitka, Alaska, where I had been an AmeriCorps volunteer working at a youth mental health clinic. And I grew up in a suburb north of St. Paul, Minnesota. Yeah, so I guess some of my personal life story and my professional work sort of bring me here to Port Townsend, being that I come from a family with a history of mental illness and addiction and recovery, of course. And I am now a licensed clinical social worker, having gotten my degree from the UW just this last spring.
That's rad. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's the kind of work that we desperately need, right? I mean, there's most people going to school for lots of different things, but like not always to just basically devote their life to helping other people. And thank you for sharing that your own sort of background on that and how it, you know, connects to the work that you want to do to help people through these situations. And yeah,
of course. Yeah. That's part of what they teach us, is that we've got to work on ourselves so that we have got a good awareness of kind of our own positionality and our own biases and our own stuff that we bring to the work so that it doesn't affect our clients.
Yeah. That's an interesting thought. I mean, just thinking about going to school for social work, I mean, it must be part of the curriculum to say, hey, you actually have to do this work on yourself. You know, like, I don't know, that in order to be able to help people, to have the context and not feel like you're just another person or above somebody going through these issues.
No, yeah, you're exactly right. There's a lot of different dynamics that we have to examine from our own personal lived experience, just like you said, so that we're not negatively impacting clients. We look at kind of our positions of power as social workers, people with degrees. We have power and we affect our clients in a lot of ways. So my story is not unique. There are most people that I know who have gone into social work do so because of some kind of life experience that brought them to the work.
And so the 4 years you've been in Jefferson County, have you worked at Dove House the whole time? Is that sort of the reason you moved here, or is there another connection?
Actually, no. I met my now wife in Sitka, and she grew up in Bellevue. She's got family in both Seattle and Lynnwood now. So we were checking out different communities on the Olympic Peninsula because we really loved the lifestyle up there in rural Southeast Alaska, and tried to replicate that in as many ways as we could. Part of what we loved up there was being in a small community. It was, to me, nothing I'd ever experienced before growing up in the suburbs, and really honestly gave me a new sense of what even that word community means. So when we were looking to move around, we did a big bike trip around the peninsula, came across little old Port Townsend, and then I actually started working at Gray Wolf Ranch for a short period before working as a counselor at Safe Harbor and Dove House.
Wow, okay. So a bike trip was kind of the culmination, because you went through Kitsap, you went through Clallam, and of course Jefferson, and this seemed like the place where you wanted to settle.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we got a really good sense, I feel like, at least, for what a community values just by biking through it. I mean, when I would go through somewhere and I would feel unsafe because there were no like bike lanes, or there was only like heavy highway traffic or something like that, I just kind of thought, well, this isn't really a place that I would want to be if I can't commute around on my bicycle. So, yeah, Port Townsend's unique in so many different ways, but we loved it when we came through and thought, let's try making a home here.
And I like how you put the combination of, you know, Seattle living and Alaska living, because, I mean, that's... I feel like Port Townsend and Jefferson County are kind of like three. It's got a feel of Seattle, It's got a feel of Alaska, and it's got a little bit of Hawaii in it because it's really is kind of an island nation. So the trifecta.
I can feel that for sure.
So finding a balance there, you know, and I also moved out here from Seattle and just, you know, never looked back. Thinking about what you ended up doing, so starting out at Grey Wolf, which is also, you know, definitely social work and important work, and then ending up at Dove House, can you tell us a little bit about what Dove House is and how you ended up being a part of it? And we're definitely going to talk about the Recovery Cafe in the second half. I want to get people on that, but give us kind of a breakdown of what Dove House is for listeners who aren't aware.
Yeah, happy to. To be honest, I never thought I would end up at Dove House. Not because I had an aversion to it. It's just that it wasn't a part of what my previous social work experience was about. So Dove House is a provider of services to victims or survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, and also general crimes. So what that looks like is that we have a confidential 24-hour domestic violence shelter. We have transitional apartments, four of those. We also then provide services, like I said, to victims of general crimes. And what I mean by that is people who are victims of fraud or identity theft, sometimes even elder abuse. So what the work itself looks like is individual advocacy, meaning that we have social workers here. Their position is called advocate. They'll meet one-on-one with the client and help them work toward their goals. A lot of that is safety planning. When you're leaving an unsafe home environment, we've got to figure out a lot of different things. A common, well, unfortunate thing that happens when someone is fleeing domestic violence is that they lose their housing because wherever it was they lived is no longer a safe place to be. Hence, of course, the shelter and the apartment. And so what we're trying to do is help folks gain a sense of, well, empowerment, sense of stability, and safety, the ultimate goal.
Mm. That's great. And so people, anyone in the community right now going through those things you mentioned, and it doesn't necessarily have to be domestic violence. It could be other things that have just kind of uprooted you as a person. They could reach out to Dove House to see if there are services Dove House could provide to them.
Yeah, that's right. We provide free and confidential services to any gender, any person who like I said, has been affected by domestic violence, sexual assault, or general crimes. And I know we'll talk about the Recovery Cafe later on, so we can save that. But, you know, we work really closely with all of the other social service providers in our community. So, honestly, if someone's hearing this and they're thinking, I don't even know where to start, go ahead and give us a call. And if we're not the right place, we'll get you to the right place.
All right. And do you have the number offhand?
Of course, yeah. Our main office line is 360-385-5292. We also have a 24-hour crisis line for domestic violence, and that number is 360-385-5291.
And somebody could call that anytime and just leave a message and somebody will call them back?
Correct. Typically, we would hope someone actually answers the phone right away, but it is it does happen sometimes that we can't pick it up right then and there, but unlike some other communities where you have kind of a call center for people managing the crisis line, it's our own staff here who are answering the phones. So you may speak with someone on the crisis line and then they end up being your advocate the next workday.
So have you guys been busier than ever during the COVID pandemic?
You know, I would say there's definitely not been any slowdown. At the outset of the pandemic, kind of our worst fears were that this was a perfect storm for domestic violence, meaning that it was really scary and uncertain. I'm sure you felt that too back in March, where we were like, we don't know what's about to happen. And we knew that we weren't supposed to leave our homes. There was the stay-home order. There was a little confusion from some people on under what circumstances can I leave my home? And domestic violence always was an exemption from that order. But some people were like, you know, the places that they would normally go find safety, they weren't finding that. They were thinking, oh, I got to stay home. And then when you're in a closed environment, I mean, maybe you experience this too if you live with other people, but like, you know, if you're just in somebody's space and they're in your space, tension can kind of increase. And then there's that, but then also the financial insecurity that a lot of people experience from losing their work. So we were worried that, you know, people would then also become homeless and not be in a safe living environment there as well.
But it sounds like you were saying that the results weren't a nominal increase, kind of that you might have been expecting, that it was just like, God, I hate to use the word business, that it was the same level of service you were providing.
Yeah, I'd say that's generally true as far as volume goes. One of the interesting things, though, was just like how we do safety planning really changed. In the past, before the pandemic, I would never really coach someone through on the crisis line, like, how do you stay safe in that current place you're in, right? Because that might be the only option that they had. Crisis line wouldn't usually talk about, like, financial management, you know, or, like, getting financial assistance. Normally, it would be like, let's get you out of there and into a hotel room for at least the night or the weekend, and then we will sort out a plan for long-term safety. So I guess I would say the volume was the same, but how we did it changed pretty drastically.
That's really interesting. And so you're one of the people that could answer the crisis line if somebody was calling.
That's right, yeah. We have, 14 full-time staff. Not all of them are doing crisis line. You know, we have some administration stuff, but yes, I'm one of them.
That's rad. So, and it helps to share the workload, and that way there's more likelihood of somebody picking up in the middle of the night if you have basically 14 people who could answer the phone.
Well, we each take turns, so we know like what night we're on or what weekend we're on. So then we make sure we got nothing else planned for that night.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, I guess beyond that, my worry was that the same as yours, I guess, that during quarantine, when folks couldn't get out of situations that were extremely, you know, problematic, that it might go up, that we might, you know, see numbers go up across the country. And is it true that numbers for domestic violence have risen across the country during COVID?
I've heard that. I don't know. I don't want to lead anyone astray because I haven't looked at national figures. I only know kind of what's happening in our community, you know?
Yeah.
It would not surprise me just because of all those factors. And something that we didn't even talk about either was when we're experiencing a constant level of stress, and the ways that we normally cope with that stress are not available to us, like even just going on a walk with a friend or going out to dinner or whatever it is, you know, when those things aren't available to us, then our mental health symptoms might increase, our substance use might increase, and we know the correlation between especially alcohol use and domestic violence is incredibly high. So I wouldn't be surprised if numbers across the country were much higher for domestic violence during the pandemic.
So we're in a housing crisis right now, probably across the country, but of course in Jefferson County now for the last couple of years. And how has that housing crisis impacted the work that Dove House does? Has it made it harder for you to rehouse people? What do you really need to help you work through the crisis and continue being able to offer that level of important service that you do in terms of rehousing?
Yeah, housing is maybe the number one challenge that we have with our clients. Like I was saying, the correlation with those folks who are fleeing domestic violence and homelessness is incredibly high. And then here in Jefferson County, like, you know, I think we all know some of the figures, right? But the rental vacancy rate is less than 1%, which just means that there's little housing coming and going. And so the market rate is quite high for rent. So what do we do about that is really tricky. We end up working with clients for a pretty long time, even though at the outset, you know, the idea behind a domestic violence shelter or even transitional apartments is that that's a temporary solution. But we'll have folks stay an apartment for a couple years before we're able to find something that's more stable.
A couple years. Wow. Yeah, it's a scary thought. And then in that sense, you know, is it Dove House helping to pay for their apartment if they don't have other work, or is there relationships that come around there? I mean, yeah, how does it work and who pays for it?
Yeah, so I'll share as much as I know. Some of the details might be better for my boss to answer, but my understanding is that for the clients who are working, a portion of their income would go toward paying their rent. And then who's paying for it? I guess the short answer is Dove House, and the longer answer is that we're funded by state, federal grants, and individual donations.
Individual donations. So people like our listeners now could potentially go to your website or give you a call and help support the work that you're doing in Jefferson County.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, our website is pretty fitted out if someone's interested in doing that. The website is dovehousejc.org. Or if they wanted to send us a check by mail, it'd be 1045 10th Street, Fort Townsend, Washington, 98368.
And if people, again, let's give them the number one more time, the emergency crisis line, the office number. If people or anybody are in situations that, you know, feel unsafe to them, I don't know how you put it to people in terms of when mm-hmm. they should call the crisis line.
Yeah, so the main office is 360-385-5292. We're open Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30. And then the crisis line, which is 24 hours, is 360-385-5291. The purpose of the crisis line really is for people who are in a domestic violence situation and they're not sure what to do. Sometimes what will happen is that law enforcement will be called out to a scene, an incident, and then they will help the victim, the person who has called law enforcement, get in contact with us. So we have to have a really close working relationship with law enforcement to make it all work out.
Talking to Brian Richardson from Dove House, and you're in charge of what is known as the Recovery Cafe, although it may not be the first Recovery Cafe, it is Dove House's own Recovery Cafe. And can you tell us what is a Recovery Cafe, where is a Recovery Cafe, when it will be open, and what are we doing here?
Yeah, so just like you said, it's actually not the first Recovery Cafe. There's a whole network of recovery cafes. It started in Seattle in 2003, and the people running it over there are amazing. So they've really honed in on what their program is, and so they've helped other organizations like Dove House now start their own recovery cafes. And so what it is it's a community of people. That's the main focus, is it's to build community and healthy connections in a safe and sober environment. And when we talk about recovery, what we mean is recovery from all of the above. So it's not just addiction or mental illness, but it's also homelessness, domestic violence and sexual assault, other life traumas. What we say is everybody's in recovery from something. So what we're trying to build here is a place that we can all do the work of recovery together.
Mm. So it's not specific to, like you said, mental illness or even, you know, victims of domestic violence or anything like that. This is something, for, I guess, how do you define who it's supposed to serve then?
Yeah, I guess what I say is if you're looking for a place to feel like you belong to a community, then Recovery Cafe could be the place for you. A lot of the folks that are served at the Recovery Cafe in Seattle, for example, I think it's something like 3/4 of them are either currently or formerly homeless. So the reason I'm being maybe a bit evasive on this answer is because all of these issues kind of intersect and overlap.
Mm.
So as I was saying in the first half of the show, you know, Dove House serves victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and general crime. And so what we see, though, is when someone experiences the kind of trauma that results from domestic violence or sexual assault, is that we develop different ways of coping with that. Some of that might look like a mental health disorder, like post-traumatic stress disorder, depression disorders, or anxiety disorders. And some people will use substances to cope with the resulting kind of chaos, confusion, and recovery from trauma. So that's why I'm saying, you know, all of these things kind of interplay. So rather than, and this isn't to say anything negative about any other social service provider or anything like that, because we need treatment and we need housing providers and all that, but rather than needing to diagnose somebody at the door and like figure out, okay, what's the one issue we're going to hone in on, we're just saying come as you are, and this is a place where you can be safe, get a warm meal, and interact with other people who are also looking for a sense of community.
That's rad. Okay. And that makes a lot of sense to me, because you don't want somebody to say, oh, I can't go to the Recovery Cafe because my issue isn't going to be represented there.
Exactly. Yes. What I like to tell people, especially when they contact me interested in getting like involved or volunteering or something, what I'll say is, if you also believe that everyone deserves love and belonging, there's a place for you at the cafe, and we'll find out what it is together.
So, I guess talk a little bit about what it's actually going to be like in there. What's it going to be when you walk into the Recovery Cafe? Are you going to be able to get food, coffee? What do you see the atmosphere as being like?
Yeah. So for the listeners who don't already know, we're located at 939 Kearney Street in Port Townsend. That's at the corner of Kearney and Blaine Street, right across from the recyclery and the golf course. So what we want people to feel when they walk in this space is a sense of warmth, a sense of like being seen, you know, being greeted and welcomed into the space. And it would look like a coffee shop, or it will look like kind of a coffee shop. There'll be tables and chairs set up. So some of this is like a vision state for how we've been making it all happen pre-pandemic, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's the vision I'm describing right now, is that you'll see kind of a bustling cafe environment, people sitting down and chatting over meals and coffee. So the aspects of the program, I guess, are free meals and coffee. We'll serve one meal a day to start with. We have support groups called recovery circles, and then we'll teach classes in the School for Recovery is what we call it. And it's important to note that this is a membership-based program, and it's kind of like a social club, you know, maybe like the Elks Lodge or the Rotary Club or something like that. But rather than paying dues to join, members are committing to doing three things. And those three things are, one, being sober when you show up, two, attending one recovery circle per week, and three, giving back to the community in some way. Now, for some people, it can sound like, oh, that's kind of a lot. I got to go every week to this circle. But the whole point of it is to kind of create this sense of like being seen and known by other people. You know, if I'm showing up and being accountable for doing that every week, not only does that like help me to set up a sense of like structure in my life, but also then I get to know people really well in my circle. So I've got a built-in support group, and I'm not just, you know, sitting in a space. And it's great. We want people to come and sit in the space and just be themselves, you know, but that's kind of an accountability structure that we have there.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, and I guess so, I was kind of imagining that it would be more like there would be that you could buy food there, but it sounds like it's really about it being, you know, a provided and a free space, and not one that's going to judge people based on whether or not they have money to buy anything there.
Exactly right. Yeah. I mean, of course, if people want to donate money for the meal or something, great, but that's not the point at all. We will serve free meals to anybody who wants it. So I was just talking about membership, and that can confuse people sometimes because they're like, well, how do I even know if I want to do that? What if I don't really like it there, you know? So what I say is that we want to have our doors wide open to anybody. Just come in and check it out, you know, a few times and see if you like how you feel while you're there, if you're greeted or get to meet anybody who you kind of have a connection with. And then we'll make that invitation and we can talk about membership, you know. But for those who are just curious, just want to check it out, maybe they're like, you know, I just need a meal and I'm not really interested in the whole program thing. But, you know, yeah, please do come by.
So I heard that it was donated construction labor for building this. Is that the case, or is that apocryphal?
Well, it's been a combination. We did hire a contractor, and he's helped build it. We had an architect help design it, some of it pro bono. We have paid the contractor and his laborers, but a ton of it has been done by volunteer labor. And I call them our super volunteers. They are amazing. And the like level of like care and craftsmanship, I've been really impressed by.
That's awesome. Yeah, I loved hearing that, because I was like, in my mind, that's like, how do you do that? But I mean, people know how important that something like this could be in our community that doesn't have a lot of services for just anybody to walk in and receive them.
Yeah. You know, I think you'd be surprised once the topic is brought up and the space is made for being vulnerable enough to share about it. A lot of us have a connection to recovery issues, whether that's in our own personal lives with our families and friends or whatever. So you'd be surprised, you know, at how many people feel called to help out with creating this kind of a community, because we just see it in our own lives on how much it's needed.
So give us the hard COVID reality. What's the current state of construction and opening and actually, you know, having a public facing recovery cafe on Kearney Street?
Yeah, honestly, Paul, the pandemic is maybe one of the worst things that could have happened to a place that's intended to build community and connection, right? When you go into the cafe in Seattle, at least when I did when it was open, you know, people would be hugging each other, greeting each other, you know, embracing. And that's, of course, what we wanted to emulate here. So pandemic hits and then we're like, oh, man, now what? And so what we've been trying to do is just like everybody else, is try to be creative about how do we maintain our connections, because isolation and loneliness can be a killer. And we've seen it in a lot of the folks who were previously engaged with the program and are feeling really down about not being able to do the things they normally would do. So that's all to say that we have been doing virtual recovery circles. We've been doing our volunteer trainings virtually. And you will just have to keep a close eye on the guidelines. Right now, I know you can only meet with 5 people in one space who are outside your family and maintain distance and mask and all that. So as far as timeline of construction goes, it's going pretty well. Like, it's certainly slower than it probably would have been otherwise, but it looks really nice. And the point of doing all the remodeling is that we want the space to be beautiful and communicate the message to somebody when they walk in, like, you matter. You matter so much that we invested a lot of time and effort into making this space look that way and be comfortable, you know? So, the construction's going well. I would love to tell you exactly what date we'll be open. As far as the timeline right now, you know, it's mid-August. If we're done with most of the construction by the end of August, I'd be super happy. And then, of course, it's the process of, going through occupancy permits and food handling permits and all that kind of thing.
Yep. So, and then figuring out your new safety protocols and all the fun stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's on the horizon, and you may be open before the end of the year. That's at least that, right?
I certainly hope so.
You know,
one thing that we have been looking at with the pandemic is, how do we meet safely? So we have some, outdoor space in the parking lot and out front and stuff, but we also have this backyard with a really beautiful view of Kai Tai Lagoon. I think you'd be surprised if you go over there and notice that, our property is kind of elevated up, so we overlook Kai Tai and we can see the Olympic Mountains beyond. So we want to make that backyard space at least usable for outdoor meetings, whether that's one-on-one with Recovery Cafe members or Dove House clients, or when it's allowed and possible to do groups back there as well. So this little teaser that in October will be starting a virtual fundraiser for the whole month to help raise the funds to build a deck out there, because right now, you could walk out there on the dirt and stuff, but we want it to be handicap accessible and to maximize the space and how we can utilize it.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I guess as we wrap it up, in terms of being able to, for people to know how they can go donate to the deck project, hit us with where they can go to help out, and maybe hit us with the crisis line as well. And then I'm going to force you to give your shout out so your family feels recognized or whoever you want to get recognized.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Paul. So to donate toward the deck project, you can go to our website for the Recovery Cafe, which is recoverycafejc.org. The crisis line for Dove House is 360-385-5291. And I'm Brian Richardson with Dove House on the Recovery Cafe. You can get a hold of me on the main line, or my email actually is maybe the best way, which is Brian, B-R-I-A-N-R, at dovehousejc.org. Quick shout out, I guess I'll give one to my wife, Heather. She's pregnant with twins right now. We're very excited. And
Your first kids?
Going into parenthood.
Are you first kids? You're going to be twins?
First, yeah, that's right. First kid.
All right. Well, you just call me anytime, Brian. I haven't had twins, but man, I got your back. Okay. It's going to be okay.
I will take you up on that. You better be careful.
I will, man. My girls are 3 and 4 now. So, we had kind of, we sort of Irish twinned them. But I can't, yeah, I mean, I can't imagine. I have friends who've gone through it and they've survived. Well, the kids are great. And, yeah, so keep on keeping on. And thank you for being with us here today. Hi to Heather and soon welcome to your twins.
Thanks for having me on, Paul. I appreciate it.
Yep. Talk to you again later.